This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Rick Britton joins us live in studio, local author and historian and cartographer. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing?
Good. We got a lot going on today.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's a very busy Friday. What are you doing this weekend? You catching up?
Yeah, I'm catching up. Actually, I'm working this weekend.
You are?
Yeah.
What are you working on?
I do that a lot.
I'm
working up at Monticello on Saturdays. Oftentimes on Saturdays, I give tours up at Monticello.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm working on maps. I've got a big project that I'm most of the way through. I'm doing maps for a book on the Battle of the Meuse-Argonne in World War I. And it's a big set of maps, and they're very detailed.
I'm totally ignorant, Rick. Where is that, and what was that?
It's in the Meuse-Argonne is in northeastern France, and it was the last major battle of World War I. And it was up to that time, it was the biggest battle that Americans had ever been involved in. There were a million Americans in this one battle. They call it a battle. If it had been in the Civil War, it would have been a campaign. I mean, it lasted 6 weeks. A million Americans involved in this one fight. It was just huge. In between the Argonne Forest on the west and the Meuse River on the east. And it was the battle that really kind of broke the back of the Germans. They put in all these fresh Americans, a million fresh Americans, and this huge offensive. A lot of American lives were lost, tens of thousands. But it broke the back of the Germans, and they sued for peace.
And so it was the Battle of the Bulge of World War I.
Yeah, yeah.
And where was it again? In France?
Northeastern France. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Was it one of those trench warfare types of campaigns?
No. Well, the Germans were retreating from one trench system to another. Yeah, but it was just this huge offensive by a million Americans. I mean, imagine that. A million-man army. How many do we have in Iraq?
130,000, I think.
30,000. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Almost 10 times that number in one fight.
Were there planes? I mean, were they dropping bombs?
Yeah.
It was everything.
Oh, yeah. Gas attacks, everything imaginable. I mean, it's just horrible.
Golly. Yeah. And you're drawing the maps of this whole campaign.
Yeah, and they're very, very detailed, so it's taking me a lot longer than I thought it was. These things happen.
Yeah. Well, speaking of World War I, we wanted to talk about that era here in Charlottesville with sort of a focus on the University of Virginia's involvement.
And this one guy, this guy is probably one of my favorite folks associated with the University of Virginia. His name was James Rogers McConnell, and that's a statue dedicated to him that sits in front of Alderman Library, kind of catty-cornered from the front of Alderman Library, that bronze statue. And you want to do the quiz right up front?
Absolutely.
I'll say, okay, here's the quiz question.
Wait, first.
Real game begins.
Is that your final answer?
Let's play.
Ding, ding, ding.
What do we have for Johnny?
I got lunch for two. Lunch for two to Zazu's. Or is it Zazu's?
Or is it Zazu's? I think it's Zazu's.
I don't know. I've never known what it is. I say Zazu's, but I'm not quite sure. I'll have to ask Allison, the owner, not my wife. So Zazu's, lunch for two to Zazu's. If you think you know the answer to this trivia question, and if you think you know, it's 977-1070.
Okay, my wife's been after me to make these tougher, so here comes a tougher one. Name the sculptor of that bronze statue. He's one of the most famous sculptors in the early portion of the 20th century. He and his son... sculpted Mount Rushmore, and he was the sculptor who began the work initially on Stone Mountain, which is right outside of Atlanta.
He didn't finish that?
He didn't finish
the,
that.
Confederates on their horseback?
Yeah, he got into arguments with the folks who were putting that together. Basically, it was the Daughters of the Confederacy. They formed an association, and he was kind of irascible. He was kind of a pushy, aggressive guy, and he got into arguments with these blue hairs, and so he finally left that project. But he began that one. And he did the one of James Rogers McConnell, the aviator, in front of Alderman, and more famously, Mount Rushmore. He and his son, whose first name was Lincoln. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
This guy has a very bizarre name. It sounds Eastern European. It probably is. He was born in Idaho.
And he's one of the most famous sculptors in the 20th century.
And certainly the most famous American sculptor of the early portion of the 20th century. Yeah.
977-1070. If you think you know the answer to this question, you give us a call. And if you, I guess you could jump on Wikipedia really quick if you really
absolutely
want to just find out. Hey, we have no problem with that. This is an open book quiz. So feel free to... to jump on Wikipedia and search Mount Rushmore and find out who the sculptor is. We got lunch for two to Zazu's if you think you know.
I've always thought that this guy's life would make a great movie. This guy was certainly bigger than life.
Not the sculptor.
Not the sculptor. Well, the sculptor was too. But this guy, James Rogers McConnell, Jimmy, or also nicknamed Mac McConnell, he was just larger than life. He was born in Chicago in 1887. His father was fairly wealthy. One grandfather, the mother's father, had fought for the Confederacy. Even as a teenager, you see some hints of his later larger-than-life personality. Supposedly, while still a teenager, he was living in New York City. He and a buddy made the first automobile trip from Chicago to New York City. Actually, I got that backwards. They were living in Chicago. They went from Chicago to New York City first, reportedly the first automobile trip from Chicago to New York City. He entered the University of Virginia in 1908. And think about this for a moment, Coy. In 1908, there were still only 1,000 students at the University of Virginia. So it was kind of a small, rural boys' school. Edwin Alderman, the first president, had only been president for 4 years. They had just instituted graduate studies at the university. Most all of the students, the vast majority, were Southerners. Now, McConnell had been born in Chicago.
Let's go to the phones really quick. Bob has been waiting patiently on line one. Hey, Bob, thanks for the call. Do you know the name of the sculptor of the James McConnell statue at UVA?
Well, you said he was from Idaho, right?
Yeah, he was born in Idaho.
Well, is it Spodinsky?
No, it's not.
Oh,
no.
Nice try, though. Bob.
I thought you were going to get it.
the bad thing is I watched a special on PBS about 2 weeks ago about Mount Rushmore and this man, and I can't think of his name.
What was the guy you mentioned?
Spodinsky.
Spodinsky. Okay. This guy, the actual sculptor, his name is even more difficult to pronounce, if that's a clue to everybody.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, Bob, go get on the internet real quick. You look it up and call us back.
I'm in my truck.
Ah, doggone it. Where's an iPhone when you need it?
Yeah.
Thanks, exactly. Bob.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks for calling. There you go. What's the name of the sculptor of the James McConnell statue at UVA? I got lunch for two to Zazu's. Free food. 977-1070.
Officially, it's called the Aviator, that statue, but obviously it's Icarus from the famous classical story. Icarus, and what was his dad's name?
Sammy Spodinsky.
No, it wasn't Spodinsky. No, but that's close. Anyway, back to McConnell. He'd been born in Chicago, but both of his parents were from North Carolina, and so I think he felt like he really fit in at the University of Virginia. It's kind of amazing I brought this list because it really seems like he was only here for 2 years, in the college the first year, and then studying law the second year. But it really seems like he specialized in extracurricular activities, that's what his major was. And here are just a few of the things he was involved in. He was a member of Beta Theta Pi and Theta Nu Epsilon. He was an assistant cheerleader. So remember back in the day, cheerleaders were all guys.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
He was an assistant cheerleader. He was in the German Club and the Ribbon Society Tilke. Okay. He helped found and then later became the president of the Aero Club, so he was an early aviator. Remember, the University of Virginia had an airport over by Milton in the early days. He was in the
I heard you saying recently Milton was actually bigger than Charlottesville at one point,
1800,
right?
Yeah, Milton was way bigger than Charlottesville.
Yeah, and now because it's totally gone.
There's nothing there. Yeah, I love telling people that. They go, what? Milton where?
Yeah, yeah.
He was in the Seven Society. He was the editor-in-chief of Corks and Curls, but probably his most famous position at the University of Virginia, he was the king of the hot feet. And prior to the Imp Society, prior to Imps, the Hot Feet were the society, and they had these huge to-dos. They had these huge soirees where they all. Do you have photographs in your book of the Hot Feet?
No, I was just looking up. I think it was 1911 or 1909 when they were disbanded by Alderman because they got out of hand.
Too raucous.
You guys can't have this club anymore.
They would dress up in these medieval costumes, and they would, you know, get really, really plastered and parade around the lawn and inviting everybody back to where, you know, that they would, you know, finish off this this party until, you know, dark 30 in the morning. And probably one of his most famous pranks was, you know, the statue that's in front of the north portico of the rotunda, the statue of Jefferson by Moses Ezekiel from Richmond. That was dedicated in 1910, and everybody who was anybody in Virginia was here for that. The governor was here, and Woodrow Wilson, who I think at the time, future president of the United States, I think at the time he was president of Princeton University. And when the young lady pulled down the, you know, they had a drape over top of it,
sure,
like a big white sheet.
Yeah.
And when the lady pulled, the young lady pulled the sheet down, well, the sage of Monticello was wearing a spittoon on top of his head. And they nailed the king of the hot feet. They nailed James Rogers McConnell for that prank.
Let's go to the phone real quick. Diantha is on line one. Hey, Diantha, do you know the sculptor of the James Rogers McConnell statue at UVA?
Is it Borglum?
It is Borglum.
It is.
You get extra credit if you know his first name.
First name.
It's tough.
Gustum or Gustum?
That is really close. It's Gutsum. Gutsum Borglum. It sounds like a disease, doesn't it?
That's close enough for an extra credit prize. How about some ice cream at Dairy Queen on top of the Zazus?
Just don't ask me to spell it.
Diantha, congratulations, and hold on. Matt's going to tell you how you can get your prizes, Matt. She's on one. You can tell her how she could pick that stuff up. That's really cool.
What a name.
And say the name again.
The name is Gutsum Borglum.
Gutsum
Borglum. You know, nowadays we have a pill for that nowadays.
Yeah.
You can get rid of that.
When you get your Borglum, you can see a doctor.
That's right.
Oh, man, I got this Borglum. Goodness gracious. So he did the James Rogers McConnell statue.
He did. He also did
in honor of this UVA student.
In honor of Jimmy McConnell.
And what happened to him? He was at UVA.
Well, he left University of Virginia in 1910. Early in his life, he had spent some time in France and spoke French. He had this really close attachment to the French people. And so when the war broke out in 1914, McConnell was in North Carolina working in public relations, and he famously quoted to a friend, it was in all the newspapers, you know, these sand hills will be here forever, but the war will not. And so I'm going. And in 1914, the only way an American could get involved was, like Hemingway, was in the American Ambulance Field Service. And so Jimmy McConnell goes over to France, and he becomes a member of this American Ambulance Field Service. And he does that for a number of years, and he started writing. And his articles about the field service were considered some of the best. But that wasn't enough. He felt like he was a shirker. He had to do more. And so then he heard that they were organizing an American squadron, flying squadron, and he had been flying at the University of Virginia. And this was the Escadrille N-124 with American flyers. In order to get around the American neutrality, all these men were members of the French Foreign Legion, which for years, of course, had been accepting foreigners. So that's how they got around the neutrality.
So he was one of the Americans that went to France to fight with France against the Germans before America got into World War I.
Against the Boche, right, yeah. Against the hated Boche. And so he became one of the first seven flyers of what became known as the Lafayette Escadrille. It was Escadrille N-124, but these men were always famous. They were ideologues. They were famous for saying, you know, we're here to repay Lafayette and Rochambeau for the American Revolution. And so it became the Lafayette Escadrille. They flew Newport 11s. They were silver painted. They became known as the Bébés because they were small, baby Newports. They were called in English Bébés in French. They were maneuverable and fast. Unfortunately, he never shot down an enemy in combat. What he was most famous for was writing. He cracked up in August of 1916, and while he was laid up, he wrote his book, Flying for France. And if anybody wants to read about air combat in World War I, this is the book. He's a scintillating writer. It's just action-packed.
This sounds like a really amazing guy.
It would be a great movie. It would be a fantastic movie. He was shot down, writing this book, and after rehealing, he hurt his back. He wrenched his back. He was shot down and killed in combat March 19th, 1917, and ironically became the last American killed in World War I before America officially declared war on April 6th, 1917.
Wow.
So he was the last American killed before America formally entered the war, and he's credited with influencing the American entry to the war because of his writings, and especially that book, Flying for France. He felt that France was fighting for liberty. They were holding back what he considered to be an evil force, the hated Boche, the German army, and that it was a noble cause. And so it's for that reason that the statue was dedicated to him in 1918.
So now you know who that statue is.
That's right.
Between Alderman and Clemens Libraries.
Right.
Of the Flight of Icarus.
That's right.
They're the aviator.
The aviator.
James Rogers McConnell.
Yep.
An amazing man. You're right. It would be a hell of a movie.
It would be. Yep.
Thank you, Rick.
Yeah. Enjoyed it.
Rick Britton, local author and historian. This is Charlottesville Right Now.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SevillePodcast.com for more.